Hey, lore lovers, my name's Eric with the Lorebrarians YouTube channel, and welcome to the latest installment of our Finding Flavor series. New magic sets, their accompanying articles, and story archives paint vibrant pictures of what the essence of the sets and their locales are. And we spend a great deal of time on the channel exploring tales, settings, and characters in fine detail. But with hundreds of cards printed in each set with dozens of flavor text and innumerable pieces of art, many of them miss their chance in the spotlight and fall through the cracks without our lens passing over them. So today we're taking some time to revisit these forgotten stories and tidbit treasures as we go through a set review of the upcoming Innistrad Crimson Vow. Be sure to check out our Finding Flavor review of Midnight Hunt if you haven't already. I'll leave a link in the show notes. But before we begin, I'm excited to announce the channel's very first giveaway. We're approaching 20,000 subscribers, a milestone I never thought possible when I first created the Lorebrarians. To show my support and give back to the community we've built here on the channel, I've partnered with Kenan Orhan at orhanwoodwork.com to create a stunning, handcrafted deck box made from walnut and wenge accents. Featuring hand-cut dovetails, the box holds 300 standard sleeved cards or anything else you'd like to store. All you have to do to be entered in the giveaway is make sure you're subscribed to the Lorebrarians channel and leave a comment below with the hashtag giveaway. Simple as that. The running will last through the month of November, with the winner being announced in December. And a big thanks to my Patreon supporters who are helping me grow and improve the channel. If you're interested in learning more and earning some perks like shoutouts and early access to videos, check out patreon.com/thelorebrarians. Alright, time to sharpen our stakes and bless our silver as we break down the set of Crimson Vow. Let's dive in. This set wouldn't be Crimson Vow without a wedding or without blood, both of which are referenced frequently throughout. Olivia Voldaren seeks to join hands with Edgar Markov to unite the vampire families and rule all of Innistrad. We get a flavorful dose of wedding preparations in the cards Bride's Gown and Groom's Finery. And if we look closely, the art of these cards matches the clothing Edgar and Olivia don on their respective cards. Their wedding has an officiant in the card Unholy Officiant, a flower girl in Blood Petal Celebrant, ladies-in-waiting in the card Olivia's Attendants, and even a wagging for the lovely couple in the card Honeymoon Hearse. These cards perfectly encapsulate the haughty decadence of a vampire wedding, and the creative team at Wizards really knocked it out of the park with the illustrations and flavor text. I also love the theme of crimson petals used throughout the set's illustrations. These petals, made of blood, represent the elegance, culture, and carnal desires of vampiric families perfectly. We see them vividly in the art of cards such as Falconwrath Forebear and Voldaren Bloodcaster. On a more figurative note, the petals themselves beautifully symbolize the blood cell, which shares its biconcave appearance with the elegant petals flitting through the air. The vampire's decadence and master over sanguine magic is represented in the blood mechanic of the set, where with a small sacrifice of discarding a card, you can gain greater knowledge and power. Of course, no wedding would be complete without a reception worthy of gossip for months ahead. The hedonism and wasteful decadence of vampiric culture is on display in many of the cards representing Olivia's and Edgar's reception. The art of blood fountain and pointed discussion show the extent of human blood gathered for such a celebration. And in the card Blood Servitor, we see a construct made entirely of blood for the vampire party guests to gorge themselves on. The elegance of vampire society is prevalent throughout the set, where pairs dance the waltz, where ghouls and zombies act as waitstaff, and where the rivers of blood never run dry. Despite the rising powers of vampires, werewolves, and other abominations, and the looming threat of eternal night laden with gripping winter, there remains a permeating sense of hope throughout Crimson Vow. The humans of Innistrad and their allies have survived Avacyn's imprisonment, her madness, the travails, and an interplanar invasion. And they're adamant that they'll stand stalwart in the face of vampiric ascension. There's much talk about faith and hope in the face of darkness within the illustrations and flavor text of several cards, such as Daybreak Combatants, where we see Stencian villagers take up arms against their vampiric overlords. The text reads, "After weeks of unending darkness, a glimpse of dawn was all the people of Stencia needed to rekindle their will to fight." Again, the peasants of Stencia demonstrate their hatred towards vampires and are called to action in the card Stencia Uprising. Although the Church of Avacyn has been broken through the travails, there are those who continue to use her symbol as a source of hope and to inspire faith in those around them. The card Honored Heirloom highlights the painstaking task of church restoration and rejuvenation of faith. Avacyn's collar was physically twisted during Emrakul's invasion, and here we see an individual warping the metal back to its original shape. The flavor text tells us, "After the travails, rune chanters set about repairing twisted symbols of Avacyn as the first step in restoring faith in the church." But the symbols of faith don't end with Avacyn's collar. For centuries, the Heron has been blessed as a creature of divine salvation, of hope for a better future, and one that instills calm and purpose in those it graces with its flight. Up to this point, the only heron that had made an appearance was the moon heron in the original Innistrad block, and this wasn't even a true heron but rather a spirit, indication that hope and faith are dying. But in Crimson Vow, amidst the tumult and darkness rising, we get our first heron printed in the card Heron of Hope, an indication that light and life are on the mend, that the blessings of dawn are just beyond the horizon. We also see the power of the heron in the card Heron Blessed Geist, where a spirit has been vindicated and filled with divine potential. Even in Innistrad's darkest hour, there are those who fight for the dawn and carry the banner of hope against all odds. More so than in the previous Midnight Hunt, Crimson Vow shows us the myriad of lingering effects the Eldrazi Titan Emrakul's presence has on Innistrad. Her imprisonment in the moon has likely caused the change in the day-night cycle and the encroachment of eternal darkness. But Emrakul's aura also has a direct impact on the transformation of various flora and fauna on the plain. In Shadows Over Innistrad, minds were corrupted and bodies were twisted with terrible mutations. The denizens of the plain were transformed into abominations and eldritch horrors, with multiple unnatural outgrowths. In Crimson Vow, we see that Emrakul's influence can still be felt in cards like Uvenwald Oddity. On the front side is a beast that famed rangers Elena and Helena believe to be a new species. On the flip side, they realize how right they are, as a gaping mouth and several claw-like appendages burst out from the abdomen of the Uvenwald behemoth in the signature style of an Eldrazi horror. We also see the mutations of several other creatures of nightmares, centered around both unnatural tentacles and the addition of multiple sets of eyes, likely caused by Emrakul's presence. The illustrations in the cards Screaming Swarm and Cruel Witness put this fact on display, where we get a glimpse of how the avian species have been transformed into winged horrors. Again, we see these physical features on display in the flip side of the card Concealing Curtains. Behind the veil, a massive eye with writhing appendages lurks, a creature of the dark either birthed from or heavily influenced by the imprisoned Eldrazi Titan. Though the efforts of the Gatewatch and Innistrad's heroes saved the plane from utter desolation, Innistrad isn't free from Emrakul's corrupting reach. Next, we'll take a look at some of the legendary characters that are making an appearance in the Crimson Vow set. Notable creatures that breathe life into the plane and shape Innistrad with their ambitions, fame, and actions. I won't be covering every legendary printed in the set, but rather those I think add the most flavor or have a rich story. The first character up for discussion is perhaps the most well-traveled, albeit least culturally refined, being on the plane of Innistrad, the infamous peddler and hawker of wares, Old Rutstein. The peasant is a purveyor of all sorts of goods, from holy relics and natural antidotes to contraband corpses and black market blood. Anywhere a deal can be brokered, Old Rutstein is sure to be found, which sends him far and wide. As a measure of his worldly knowledge, Rutstein has appeared on the flavor text of many cards throughout the Innistrad sets. We hear him listing the benefits of a Geist-fueled scarecrow, or trying to sell his wares to a hinterland werewolf. His journeys have filled his packs with many eclectic and rare devices, and have filled his head with countless stories. In Crimson Vow, we finally receive a printing of this notable peddler, whose card abilities are as widespread and variable as the wares he sells. Up next is the stunning, glamorous Crimson Bride, Olivia Voldaren. Progenitor and matriarch of the Voldaren bloodline of vampires, Olivia is known to be reclusive and secretive, choosing a life of mystery in her Lurenbraum estates, far from settlements or city centers. Despite her antisocial nature, Olivia and the Voldarens are notorious for hosting the most shameless and sinful galas, where they openly display their vast wealth and debauchery. In Crimson Vow, the Voldaren estates hold the ceremony and reception for the most anticipated vampire wedding in centuries, a marriage between Olivia and Edgar Markov. We see Olivia's purpose for the union in the flavor text of her card. It reads, "Her grand wedding had one goal, to unite the vampire bloodlines under her rule." After assisting Soren Markov in his fight against Nahiri during Shadows Over Innistrad, Olivia found the vampire encased in stone. She took Soren's blade and anointed herself the new lord and protector of Innistrad. To consolidate power, Olivia intends to perform a ritual that will grant her control over Innistrad's angelic host. She has already in her possession the Moonsilver Key and an imprisoned Sigarda, but she requires the expertise of Edgar Sangromancy to complete the ritual. We see Olivia awaken the ancient vampire and enthrall him in order to fulfill her wishes. Although her motives are dark and selfish, Olivia doesn't shy from hosting the most elegant of weddings. In the card's wedding announcement and courier bat, we see that her invitation reaches across all of Innistrad, and thousands answer the call, as Lurenbraum fills with notable guests and ecstatic partygoers. The Voldaren matriarch isn't one to be outdone, and so dons a wedding gown that truly steals the breath away. In the illustration of her card, we see Olivia's dress shrouded in crimson wisps, the spirits of her victims as an elegant accessory and a reminder of her dangerous power. The reclusive and eccentric progenitor of the Stromkirk bloodline of vampires finally makes an appearance in Crimson Vow as Runo Stromkirk. Runo has always been fascinated with eldritch powers and ancient entities, and in the early days of the plane, devoted himself to the worship of pre-Abyssinian gods. Many of the beings he sought were sea-bound masters of primal forces and rulers of the tides. After he was blessed with the curse of vampirism, Runo led the Stromkirk bloodline to the coastal province of Nephalia and erected the brilliant city of Drunau, a location that afforded him easy access to the rocky shoreline from which he could praise his gods. Though Runo remained aloof, his family became quite present in the happenings of Nephalia and earned a reputation as unequaled artisans, patrons, and blademasters. During the travails and Emrakul's invasion, Runo used his glamours to mingle with human cultists and worship all manner of horrible monsters, including the Gitrog, the Kralmar, and Emrakul herself. In the flavor text of Awoken Horror, we hear Runo's devotion to the gods of the sea and the powers of the ocean. It serves as evidence of the ancient power of the deep, a reminder that the sea is the only thing worthy of reverence. In the current day, Runo has discovered a being to which he devotes himself completely, a dark creature of the fathomless deep known as Lord Krothus. We can see his connection to the monster in the dual-sided nature of his card. When Runo's rituals are complete and sacrifices made, he flips over and beckons forth Krothus, Lord of the Deep, Kraken Horror, and Deity of the Waves. For his efforts and skills in the occult, many view Runo as a prophet. Our next legendary creature is a renowned hero and champion of light, who's been afflicted with a terrible curse and struggles with his internal darkness. Sir Audric was once commander of the famed Gavinny Riders and earned several commendations for his valiant efforts in protecting humanity from Thraben to the Moorlands. Equipped with a blessed blade that glows softly, Audric led crack units of Cathars against werewolf Halpacks and vampiric interlopers. After Machaeus the Lunark's death, during the Siege of Thraben, and in the early days of the Travails, a Lunark Council was established to steward the church, and Audric earned a seat on the council as the Lunark Marshal. Acutely aware of Avacyn's madness and the increasing intolerance of the church, Audric organized much of the council and Cathars in dealing with their fallen archangel. He had given his all to the church, so it was a crushing blow to his resolve when Audric discovered that Avacyn's institution had been infiltrated and corrupted by the demon-worshipping Skirstag. Betrayed and disillusioned, Audric abandoned his crumbling church and joined Knight Cathar Thalia in the Order of St. Traft, which fought doggedly against the corrupted Lunark Council and the maddened angels during the Travails and Shadows over Innistrad. After the Travails, Audric and Thalia interrupt a cursed ritual performed by the vampire Henrika Domnathy to bring the demon lord Ormondal to the material plane. Before the sacrificial rites could be complete, Audric threw himself between the blade and its intended target, saving an ally, but fatally injuring himself. Henrika pounced Audric in his wounded state, feasting on his blood and transferring the curse of vampirism onto him. This is seen in the art and flavor text of Hero's Downfall, which reads, Audric resisted the vampire's curse with all his strength, but after a lifetime of fighting monsters, he was doomed to become one himself. His pure blood was like holy water to the vampire, however, and Audric and Thalia beat Henrika back, forcing her to flee. The fallen Cathar now struggles endlessly with a curse that seeks to take away his humanity and consume him. Unlike other vampires, the tactician is not harmed by the moon, but rather rejuvenated by its glow. Though the curse twists his body and mind, Audric's pure soul and life dedicated to a higher purpose struggle to keep it at bay. Edgar Markov, the legendary patriarch of House Markov and the progenitor of all vampiric bloodlines on Innistrad, is a character central to the story of Crimson Vow. Thousands of years ago, famine swept across Stencia, and Edgar, an aging alchemist, experimented in ways to achieve immortality and be free of the need to eat. To this end, he made a pact with a demon and performed a dark blood ritual that transformed him into the first vampire. Requiring not food but blood for sustenance, Edgar imparted his gift on three other noble families to survive the famine, and thus were born the Voldaren, Falkenrath, and Stromkirk bloodlines. Though Edgar is the father of all vampires, little was known about him save for his appearance in the flavor text of Uncanny Speed. He then made an appearance in the Commander 2017 product, where we can see him at the height of his power. Markov is extremely old, even by his own kind standards, and so often retreats to his coffin within Markov Manor for many years, lying in a state of dormancy, rising only sparingly to impart advice to his grandson Soren, or hear word of the state of the plane. Edgar returns in Crimson Vow, awoken and entranced by Olivia Voldaren, to unite the two vampire bloodlines in marriage, making her the leader of the most powerful families on Innistrad. The abilities of Markov's card give a flavorful spin on implementing his immortality and long periods of slumber with sporadic risings. When he dies in game, he tires or grows weary of the world, and so slinks back into his coffin with counters that mark the passage of time. When the last is removed, he once more stirs from his resting place and returns to the world of the living. The next legend is not one but a pair of human rangers known throughout the forests of Kesig for their survival skills and prowess in tracking the creatures slinking beneath the shadows of the dense thickets. The partners Helena and Elena. These two made appearances in the flavor text of several cards in the original Innistrad block, mostly around their adventures in the harsh wilds of the Ulvenwald. Elena works as a trapper, tracking and hunting wild game or other creatures that lurk, while Helena acts the part of ranger, a guide to the tortuous paths of Kesig and slayer of monstrosities that prey on humans. Both received printings in the Commander Legends set, and now they return as a single card, united in heart and soul. They act as legendary defenders of humanity in the backwoods of Kesig and track the untold horrors that go bump in the night. In the flavor text of Ulvenwald Oddity, we hear banter between the two. On the front side, Helena says, "Obviously it's dangerous, but I've never seen anything like it. This could be an entirely new species. I say we follow it." And on the flip side, Elena responds, "I've learned enough. I say we run." The two are an inseparable pair and an unstoppable force. Leader of the Dawnheart Coven, mastermind of the Harvesttide Festival, an initiator of the ritual to activate the Celestis and restore the balance of day and night on Innistrad, Catilda was first introduced in the Midnight Hunt set. She set Arlen Cord on a quest to recover the Moonsilver Key, an artifact necessary in conjunction with the Sungold Lock, to complete the ritual and unlock the Celestis. Though the Planeswalker was successful, the Harvesttide Festival was infiltrated and attacked by werewolves of Tovalar's dire pack. Catilda continued her ritual, which required the sacrifice of a soul, and so released her spirit essence. Before the spell's completion, however, Olivia Voldaren steals the witch's body and demands a trade. Catilda for the Moonsilver Key, of which Arlen begrudgingly agrees. The ritual fails, and the Celestis remains dormant at the end of Midnight Hunt's story. But Catilda's spirit still lingers, a force that won't rest until day is restored. On the front side of her card, the Dawnheart Martyr remains vigilant and prepared to continue the ritual once the key is back in her possession. We see that her spirit learned its lesson from Olivia's strike and now has protection from vampires. On the flip side, we see the success of the ritual, the activation of the Celestis, and the restoration of Dawn on Innistrad. The valiant and duty-bound Night Cathar Thalia returns in Crimson Vow to reprise her role as Guardian of Thraven and all things holy. The young but brilliant leader orchestrated Thraven's defenses during a zombie siege in the original Innistrad block. And again, she answered the call to serve when the High City came under the threat of Emrakul's Eldrazi invasion during the travails and shadows over Innistrad. She's proven to be humanity's most stalwart protector, standing between the innocents and the monsters that hunt them, and she formed the Order of St. Traft during Avacyn's madness to resist the twisted oppression of the Lunark Inquisition. We hear of Thalia's incorruptible faith in the flavor texts of cards like Piercing Light and Sanctify, which read, creatures of the night dissolve like shadows in the light of faith. And Olivia Voldaren has faith only in herself. We answer to a higher calling. Though sadly she only appears as a reprint rather than a new iteration, Thalia receives new art and flavor text which highlight the fate of Thraben and her mission to cleanse it. It was overrun by Liliana's zombie hordes after the fight against the Eldrazi, and we can see several ghoulish silhouettes pushing in on the glass behind her. Her text reads, "Thraben belongs to the living. I will not rest until it is cleansed." All right, with the new mechanics, legendary characters, and new cards discussed, it's time to talk about the flavor finalists. This section is my take on the top 5 spiciest and most flavor-filled cards in the set of Crimson Vow. We're talking art, flavor text, abilities, card name, anything and everything that adds to the lore and flavor of a card. Of course, these are only my own picks, and I'm sure you'll have your own list of a top 5. So let me know in the comments which cards make your flavor finalists. Without further ado, let's get started with this set. Making the cut as the 5th most flavorful card is one we've mentioned already, but is more than worthy of a spot. The progenitor of vampire kind himself, Edgar, Charmed Groom. His ability and that of his coffin perfectly encapsulate the lore surrounding the character. His leadership grants a buff to his own kind, and when he's killed on the battlefield, Edgar doesn't actually die. Instead, he tires of the world and creeps back into his coffin to convalesce for decades or centuries at a time. As the vampire overlord, he draws a following even in his absence. And soon, when Edgar is once more ready to stir, he flips back into his front side to lead followers. All right, coming in at number 4 is the Crimson Vow printing of Abrade. The Falkenrath bloodline are the most predatory, aggressive, and brazen of all the vampires. They assume the raptorial nature of the falcon, their family's namesake, and although much about their progenitor is shrouded in mystery, we do know that he was an unparalleled falconer who envied the bird's freedom. In the flavor text of Abrade, we hear that the Falkenrath progenitor was a vicious falconer, and the line is quick to remind others of its heritage. On top of this rich flavor, we're given a spectacular piece of art that ties the Falkenrath to the bird of prey. As the vampire's victim is throttled by its quick, unanticipated assault, a silhouette of a falcon can be seen in the background, similarly striking its prey. Like the falcon, the Falkenrath vampires have completely cast off their ties to civilization and culture, seeking purpose in the exhilarating bloodlust of the hunt. My 3rd pick in the flavor finalists is the card Ragged Recluse. A rather peculiar hermit who has around her fireplace an odd assortment of dead creatures, in tubs, hanging from the rafters, and on display shelves. Despite appearances, the recluse seems rather harmless, and even offers up victuals to a weary traveler, as mentioned in her flavor text. Forgive my manners, it's been so long since I had a guest for dinner. It's too late for the traveler when they realize that she literally has her guests for dinner. She kills the unsuspecting victim and adds them to the boiling pot in front of her, a malicious and unholy stew she gulps immediately. When the recluse transforms into the odious witch, we hear the events unfold in the flavor text, which reads, "Her cauldron refilled, she settled in to wait for the next unsuspecting traveler to knock at her door." A chilling thought, an excellent play on words, that earns Ragged Recluse its place at number 3. Coming in the number 2 spot, we have the card Soul Cipher Board. A device that's design is reminiscent of the Ouija boards used by people to contact spirits and other supernatural forces during a seance. The art shows us several runes and letters with a planchet for indication. What's interesting is that we see symbols of faith rather than desecration in Avacyn's collar and the griff. Members of the elusive Quietus cult use soul cipher boards to contact spirits of the dead, which we can see in the illustration of its flip side in Cipherbound Spirit. The flavor text gives us information into the cult's motives. Rather than consort with demons, the Quietus cult seeks wisdom from the dead. The sinister organization is also referenced in the flavor text of Shattered Sanctum. The Soul Cipher card shows us both the bizarre artifacts used to contact the dead and the appearance of such spirits in answer to the calls. A very flavorful card indeed. Finally, rounding out the top five and the winner of the most flavorful card in Crimson Vow is the rather innocuous white common, Estwald Shield Basher. This card is brimming with lore for us to sink our teeth into. The village of Estwald was first mentioned in the original Innistrad set, a settlement in the Nearheath region of Gavinny that was infiltrated by a vicious howlpack of werewolves who murdered countless villagers. The tragedies befalling Estwald didn't end there, however, for in Avacyn Restored, a violent elemental storm of rage and energy, known as the Malignus, descended upon the town, leaving behind nothing but ash and agony. Or so we thought. Estwald Shieldbasher is here to show us that at least one person survived the Malignus, thanks mainly to her nearly indestructible oak door. The flavor text reads, "The door to her home survived the fires of the Malignus. Now, it's her greatest weapon." And we see her wielding it with brilliance in the illustration. With such a strong door, impervious to the forces of the Malignus, it's no wonder that it can also grant the soldier indestructibility seen in her activated ability. Truly, a great little bit of flavor that calls upon events of the past and creates an enchanting narrative all in one card. And that's why the Shield Basher is the flavor finalist. Thanks for watching and listening to this Finding Flavor set review. I hope you enjoyed our lore-driven breakdown and review of Crimson Vow. There are some great pieces of flavor in this set, and I'm sure many will enjoy getting their hands on it. But now I want to hear from you. Let me know your review of Crimson Vow. Did it hit or miss the mark? What cards make your flavor finalists? Let me know if there are any cards I missed that you think have great bits of flavor. Which cards you're most excited to see printed, as well as suggestions for future videos in the comments below. And now, I want to give a very special thanks to my patrons that are helping grow and improve the channel. The support means so much to me, and I really appreciate their generous backing. And if you want to learn more about the Patreon community we're building, check out patreon.com/thelorebrarians, or click the link in the description. Big thanks to Alex Joaquim for the intro and outro music. Until next time, go forth and explore the lore.